Welcome. How's everybody doing? Take care now. Thank you guys for coming into this session for FCCLV and welcoming our special guest, Dr. Richardson, who is a low vision specialist from the Greater Orlando, specifically Winter Park area. Is that correct? Winter Park. So he's a local boy and has some interesting approaches to dealing with individuals like us. I don't think he identifies us as being broken. For those members who are here, we do have a little bit of carryover business that we wanted to discuss here in person as best we could, but we are going to give Dr. Richardson his time. And the good thing about me being the hotel coordinator is I get to know what rooms I have to give up. So I don't have to give up this room right at 4 o'clock. So we will take care of that after Dr. Richardson. So without further ado, welcome Dr. Richardson.
Thank you, Mikey. Hello, everyone. How are you doing today? I want to talk about low vision with all of you. You guys are experts, just like I am, from a different perspective, right? So what I like to do is really help people. So what I want to do is just kind of go through my slides a little bit. They may be full of a lot of words, but that's not really for you. That's really more for me, so make sure I don't forget to talk about stuff, okay? So I'll explain everything that you see. This is a picture inside of my office. I like the color blue, if you can tell. And then my wife is in green. No, she wore blue today too. Slide, please. So thank you, Florida Council of the Blind, the officers, for inviting me to your 70th annual. That's amazing. 70 years. Making life better through public education, legislative action, statewide information, Project Insight. Amazing things. But remember, all that is with money. So make sure you donate, 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 donate. Talk to all your friends, your family. Make sure that you support these organizations so that we can continue to help you. Quick introduction of myself. I was born and raised in Puerto Rico. I moved here with my parents. I went to Oviedo High School. Then I got an Army scholarship and went to the oldest private military school in the country called Norwich University in Vermont. And there I became an officer in the Army, and I served with the 101st Airborne Division. And I had 3 tours of combat. I went to Kosovo, Afghanistan, and Iraq. And after all that, I said, that's enough. Let's go back to school and do something more fun and easy. So I went back to optometry school, became an optometrist, and had the opportunity to go to China for 3 months and worked at an eye hospital in China. And I can report that they do everything that we do because they copy our technology. So it's very, very good standard of care there, just as it is here. I've done a bunch of humanitarian trips. I speak Spanish, so I like to go to places that you know, speak Spanish, but that's not required. If anybody's going on a mission anywhere and you'd like to take some eye care with you, let me know. I always like to travel and help people, so it's a double whammy. And lastly, I opened my office in 2014, so I'm going on 10 years here this coming April. I'm very proud of that. Small businesses pretty much tanked during COVID, so I'm very pleased that I survived. The top left is a picture of me during the Iraq war in front of one of Saddam's palaces. That happens to be in Babylon. I had the opportunity to see old Babylon, and that was very amazing. Next to it on the right at the top is a helicopter picking up a truck because I was a transportation officer. So everybody always challenged me, well, you're supposed to pick these things up, but nobody had ever done it. So I said, let's do it. And there's my guys doing it. On the far right, that's my baby girl, 2.5 years old. Her name's Maya. She doesn't let me sleep. The one on the bottom left, her name is Layla, and that's my 10-year-old. I like to fish, play guitar, and then there's my wife, which is up here in the front helping me out with our kids visiting Puerto Rico. I am a member of the Lions Club. If you all know, the Lions, yeah, are the Knights of the Blind, right? Now, did you all realize that it was Helen Keller Day on June 1st, the day that you guys started, I think, your conference, right? So in 1970-something, I believe, yep, June 1st designated as Helen Keller Day. So I'm a big fan of the Lions. I do a monthly clinic here in town. I provide free eye care for anybody who wants it. I give them free eyeglasses if they're required. Again, the idea is that we help each other the best we can with those things that we're good at. So a quick did you know? Did you know that people with vision loss are more likely to report depression? Does that sound reasonable? My goodness. I think that this is what I spend most of my time with, to be honest with you. I kiss and hug all of my patients and tell them you're going to be okay. All right. And you're not defined by your vision, and you can do anything and everything you want with certain limitations and maybe doing it differently, special tools, etc. So a question for the crowd. What is the most common eye problem in the United States? Go. Refractive error. We need glasses, people. The most common eye problem is glasses. I tricked ya. How about in children? What's the most common eye problem in children? It's called amblyopia. Cause of blindness in the entire world. Try yet again. It's cataracts. We take it for granted because we can go to the surgeon next week and have cataracts taken out. But if you go to Mongolia, I promise you, by the time they're 65, 70 years old, these people are 100% blind with a cane, and it's preventable. So it's very sad. It's because they don't have the availability of procedures like we have them. How about most common cause of permanent impairment? That's going to be your macular, all right, and your diabetes. Those are the two bad ones there. Most vision loss caused by diabetes is preventable, up to 90%. It has to do with taking ownership of ourselves and making some changes in our lifestyle, and a lot of those things are preventable. 12 million people 40 and over have a vision impairment. Approximately 1 million Americans are blind, and approximately 3 million Americans have a vision impairment from just refractive error. Like I said, all they need is glasses. That's 3 million people. That's a lot. So anybody look at this guy. What do you think? There's a spider up on the board. And the reason I chose him is that this is one of the most interesting creatures on the planet. He has four pairs of eyes. Can you see the pairs of eyes on the top of his head there at all? Yeah, he's kind of a funky, colorful looking guy. Next slide, please. Now, does anybody know what this guy is? It looks sort of like a lobster, but it's actually called a mantis shrimp. 15 pigments where we have three. So they can see ultraviolet, they can see polarized light, they can see all kinds of fun little things that we can't see. And not only that, they have two eyes that you can see maybe at the top, and they're stalked and they move, and so very complicated. So this guy is named as being the most complicated vision in the animal planet. Now, is anybody familiar with a nictitating membrane? You ever heard of a nictitating membrane? Yes, that's kind of like that clear eyelid that some animals have to protect their eyes. Sharks, I have an eagle up here. In fact, if you look at the picture of the eagle, the right eye has the nictitating membrane, but the left one doesn't. So it's one on and one off. He's kind of winking at us with his nictitating membrane. All right, but birds, lizards, all kinds of different animals have this protective, it's a third eyelid. Okay, it's not that they don't have eyelids, it's that they have this additional one that we don't have. So I thought I'd share that with you. Next slide, please. So the eye is a receptor, which means that all it does is, you know, capture information. And so that's why when you see your ophthalmologist, it's critical that the anatomy of the eye is healthy. If we're having all kinds of decrease in vision, and then the retina is not, you know, healthy, then you're not going to be able to have functional vision out of that receptor. So making sure the eye is as healthy as possible is really what's going to do it. And I didn't want to make it too complicated, but vision starts from the top there, comes through the cornea, then the iris protects the light, so it controls how much light. Then it goes through the first lens to bend light. And so vision is really complicated. So light comes into the eyes. Light has to then be focused, then the iris controls the amount of light, then the receptors again capture that light, and now that image is inverted and backwards, so we forget that it's kind of like, it's difficult. And then the eye transforms that light into a chemical, and then that chemical travels up your optic brain or optic nerve and into the brain, and the vision actually happens in the brain. So again, the eye is strictly a receptor capturing information. Your brain is the powerhouse that really makes the vision happen. It's neurotransmitter. It's a chemical. It's usually acetylcholine. Yeah. and it's sent by one of the terminals of the nerve and captured by the next, and that's how that conduction travels up the brain. No, definitely not electrical. It's a chemical system, and that's why it's so amazing to me that you can take light, make it into a chemical, put it into different parts of the brain, and now you see shapes and colors and lights and things like that. That to me is amazing. I think that's very, very amazing. Next slide, please. Now, this slide is very colorful, but when I put the word vision down at the bottom, we take for granted that there's all these other things that comprise that word of vision. So we have what I call video cameras, right? We have two eyes. So you have to control two eyes simultaneously. Imagine if you have two video cameras. It's really hard to make those focus and do what they need to do simultaneously. So you have two eyes that are focusing it far and focusing it near and working together. We already know these, but just in case. For me, low vision is a very simple definition. If you can't, function with the vision that you have, then that's low vision. I don't really put a number on it. I've had patients who are 20, 30, 20, 40 and struggle. And I have patients who are 2200, and they must be a very good personality. They go with the flow and everything is okay. So it's really interesting that you can't really attach a number necessarily. However, for definition of legal blindness, you do have two criteria because we have to cut it off somewhere. So it's 2200 for vision or 20 degrees of field in your better seeing eye. So those are the definitions by the Social Security Administration of the United States. All right, and lastly, the minimum standards for driving, because I have to admit, one of the hardest things that I have to do is tell my patients that they shouldn't or can't drive anymore, right? That's probably one of the hardest things that I have to do. So what is the difference? Do I need both an ophthalmologist and an optometrist? Why am I here, right? Ophthalmologists are medical or osteopathic doctors, specialize in eye and vision care. They diagnose and treat all disease and perform surgeries. An optometrist, we do everything except for surgery. And I like it that way, all right? So the focus for the ophthalmologist is what I was mentioning to you. It's biology, it's anatomy. It's making sure that the receptor in the brain stays healthy so that vision is possible. But my job is different. My job is using the vision that you have left creatively so that we can do our life better. Because so often you'll hear from the ophthalmologist, the doctor says, I just completed the best surgery I have ever done in my entire 40-year career. And that same patient comes to me and says, I can't see. And that's horrible. That's what shows you that the anatomy and the function are separate. You can have a fantastic procedure and still not have functional vision. And that's sad, but that's that reality. So my personal job is to use your vision creatively so that you can do anything and everything you want to do, again, with some certain limits, okay? Now, like I said, counseling, I labeled this next set of slides the Dr. Low Vision Way. I've been kind of labeling myself, and my website is Dr. Low Vision, so I'm going to run with that. And this is kind of how I approach when I have a patient come to see me, okay? So the first thing that I do is I do a bunch of counseling. I want to make sure that you know what you have and how it affects you. Because if you know what you have, you can help me fight it. If you don't know, I'm on my own. And that's not fair. It's your eyes, not mine, all right? And so looking down here at the bottom picture, macular degeneration, you can see that there's some dark areas of missing vision. But then what's in the sink there? There's two like phantoms or something. So this is what's called Charles Bonnet syndrome. Does anybody here see things that are not there? I got one in the back. Believe it or not, these are not hallucinations. These are not hallucinations. You're not going crazy, okay? What happens when you lose a little bit of vision is that the brain is so powerful and it wants to fill in those gaps for you. And so you're getting, I like to call them visual memories because the word hallucination has a negative connotation. If you look online, they're called hallucinations. I choose to call them visual memories. And so this person has these two dolls. And if I ask this patient if they recognize those two dolls, they might say, I have never seen those before in my life. Or they might say, oh, I used to work with dolls my whole career. There's no necessarily no association with things that you love or remember. Go ahead, slide, please. So There on the top right, that's Mr. Charles Bonnet himself. Good looking fella. Got the curls. Yeah. All right. So he, this is, like I said, experienced by some patients who have lost some vision. It's not a sign of mental health problem. It could be repeating patterns of lines or dots, geometric shapes. They can sit still. They can be in color or black and white. So it's very variable, okay? The main thing I would say, if you're suffering with some of these visual memories, is to go ahead and try to change it up. If it's dark, turn the lights on. If you're kind of just sitting still, do some activity. If it's quiet, turn some music on. So you just kind of want to change it up on yourself. The other thing is, it tends to happen if you're kind of in stress or fatigue or anxiety. Do those things work for you at all? If you make some of those changes back in the back, who experiences some of these? Give me a second.
Give her a microphone, please.
Yeah, I got you. I'm coming. Yeah.
I was in the hospital for 10 days in March, and that's when I've always kind of had it just a little bit flickering of black color that, but when I was in the hospital, it was, I had like, before I went into surgery, it was like a big brick wall, and I was laying in a bed, you know, the anesthesiologist came in and stuff like that. So it wasn't really a lot I could do. I was just waiting, and then I had a lot of, I kind of call them spirographs, but I didn't really know what to do. It had never been that intense. And I even mentioned it to some of my doctors. They had no idea what I was talking about.
I only have one question for you, right? I was thinking about this one out when you were saying that, and that is, do these startle you when they happen? Do they scare you? These things that you see that are not there, do they startle you, or are you just like, oh, there it is, I'm upset by it? The truth is, we can't control these things. They're kind of crazy like that. The question that I asked is one of the most valid questions. When you have mania, or when you know you have visions, or when you're schizophrenic, these visions actually interact with you, and they scare you, and you're upset by them. Whereas these are strictly like watching TV, you know, they're in there, you don't want them there, but they don't necessarily, you know, affect you. Yes, sir.
I've had that happen to me, riding down the street, and all of a sudden it looked like a car was coming at me. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling myself, I can't see, so why am I seeing a car coming at me? And it keeps looking like we're getting ready to have an accident. And then the next thing you know, there's something else that. It's always something that you know in your mind is not there.
That's why we know it's not mania. That's why it's a visual memory, because it doesn't affect you in any way. You just notice that it's happening. Obviously, you don't want it there, but it's not causing you to have any stress or any problems. Yes, sir, please.
With that being said, what is the kicker to it? Mine, I have these bright white flashes it's like throwing a pebble in a pond, you know, the ripples that mm-hmm. come out, and they work like in waves, and sometimes it can last seconds, sometimes it can last.
Can I ask what your diagnosis is? What is your vision condition?
Idiopathic posterior uveitis, so they have no idea.
I would say with uveitis is that you're constantly stimulating your retina. Because when I hear of the word flashes, that's the retina being stimulated. I don't know that you're experiencing Charles Bonnet as much as maybe that retina is being substimulated.
And I can close my eyes, so it's not one eye.
Right.
It's actually like,
it's freaky.
I'm tripping, man.
Yeah, have fun with it. Enjoy it.
I believe he's talking about photopsias, correct? Yes, I have them. I had had them for about 5 years. They just flicker of lights. Sometimes they look like half moons. And it's the, what it was explained to me, there's some areas in my retina, they have no, the photoreceptors are not active. So the brain is trying to understand what's happening. And that's why I get them. Photopsias, yeah.
Thank you for sharing. Photopsia.
Yeah, I have something that I experienced that I could be sitting in a room and I will swear that the lights are on, like a lamp or whatever. And my wife will come in and say, why are you sitting in the dark? I'm like, I'm not sitting in the dark. The lights are on. She goes, no, they're not. And, you know, that's just something that I experience, especially a lot. Especially I notice when I'm tired or fatigued. I wanted to know if that was so kind of a normal.
Yeah, I mean, those things can all happen as symptoms. What I would say, a way to resolve it, kind of face up and let the camera look in the room. It'll tell you what the brightness of the room is. And if you turn the lights out, it makes no noise. So it's like a, depending on the brightness of the room. So that could potentially help you if you're having difficulty telling, you know, light and dark. Do you have trouble sleeping? Are you having problems with your circadian rhythm at all? No. Okay, good. Good. Yes, sir. Next one, please.
Okay, my name is Alan Williams. I was going to the Miami Light Hospital of Blind in special transportation one morning. I guess I was kind of half asleep. I saw maybe somebody walking or either riding in a car, something.
Yeah, you got that Charles Bonnet a little bit. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Did you say hello to the person?
It just happened a few seconds. And then another time, and then something strange happened. I don't know if anybody ever did this before. As soon as you lay down, you start dreaming.
Okay. So are you able to fall asleep very quickly?
It just happened.
Okay. And do you remember these dreams? Cool.
I want to know what it means when one day it's like you're in a cloud, it's real light, and then another day it's dark.
Yeah, yet again, that's just, you know, the variability of the retina and how it's functioning. You know, I'd have to look really carefully at your case and how advanced vision is to give you better advice. But I mean, the retina can do all of these different symptoms that you're all describing. These are all normal things that I hear every day. But look how unique. You might have the same condition and it completely shows off different. That's what's unique about this low vision. Yes, ma'am, please.
I would like to know if you know the difference between optic nerves and Stargardt, because I'm having a problem with my doctor. One what is Stargardt and one what is optic nerves. So I told the doctor, if you don't know, then they did a blood test.
Uh-huh.
And they were supposed to have a research with my whole family. The five of my children has the same problem.
Okay.
And then they said, no, we cannot do research because we don't have it. You have Stargardt.
Well, the Stargardt makes more sense if it runs in your family this way, right? But, you know, it depends. If the genetic testing pointed at a particular gene, then I'm going to go with that. I mean, that's the genetic makeup and that's the studies that we're doing. We have up to, I think, like 250 eye genes already in our panels that we study.
Well, 2 weeks ago, he's supposed to be the specialist at Bascom Palmer.
Uh-huh.
He said, you acting like Trump. You know, you say you don't have Stargardt. It's up to nerves. So you may be the carrier for Stargardt, but it's not.
Well,
but it's not. It's up to nerves. I said, what's who told you? I said, but you're the one that send the referral for the people to do the blood test.
What's tricky is that some of these things can you know, again, manifest a little bit atypically. But if your guys at Bascom are telling you that, listen, those are kind of experts. I'm going to bow down and say, yes, sir. You understand? Well, if they don't know, they're trying to figure it out. I promise you, right? Because, but having said that, I mean, I would challenge you that what you probably need is more someone like me to help you just do the things you want to do better. Even though knowing what we have is important, I said that was the first thing I said. It doesn't necessarily change how we're going to manage it necessarily. Makes sense? So I don't want to get hung up on things that may not have a lot of, you know, a lot of weight necessarily. Next one, please.
Yeah. You kind of just stole my thunder with your last response to this time. And I've had two different diagnoses, one optic nerve hypoplasia, the other one optic nerve atrophy. Mm-hmm. I've had some doctors say they're one and the same, which I know they're not. I'm a teacher for the blind and visually impaired.
Good.
But
You straighten that off.
Even though I know it's what do I need to for me to help me be successful and independent, et cetera, but still just having a knowledge of, okay, yeah, I do have that. I mean, I go around and tell everyone I have ONH,
mm-hmm.
But it would be kind of nice to have the accurate diagnoses. But again, you know, it's all about what's going to help me be the best I can be in this world.
So that's what I do. And that's exactly what I do. Diagnosis aside, there's times when I get notes from the retina doctor. I won't even look at the retina on my patient. Why? I just told you, I don't care about anatomy necessarily. You've already been evaluated by a specialist doing that. So why am I going to recreate that same work? I'm going to spend all my time educating you, loving on you, and you know, trying to figure out how I can resolve your complaints. Because everybody's complaints are unique, okay? I want to kind of finish my slides, and then we'll do a lot more questions, I promise, because I don't want to run out of time. Next slide, please. All right, so again, the Dr. Low Vision way. So after we've talked about counseling, we've done, you know, asked if they've had some Charles Bonnet kind of experiences, then we want to make sure we talk about the social stuff, you know, if you go to school, if you're working, if you have problems with some family members because of vision, they don't understand or they don't respect you, or if you have those kind of problems. So there's devices, there's tools that can help you to make sure that you take the proper medication. Is everybody here familiar with ScriptTalk or with some of these similar devices? They will put a label on your medications, and then either a reader or a standard cell phone can tell you what the medication and what the instructions are. So if you're having trouble, you know, seeing which medication is which, please get one of these devices. We want to prevent those easy to, you know, easy errors. Then we do the trial frame refraction. And I put a picture down here of a guy with a thumbs up. Those are my favorite glasses. Every time I put those on a patient, it makes my day. The reason we use glasses like this is because you may have noticed that not everybody looks straight on. Some people use a different head position. It's called eccentric viewing. The center part of their retina is off, so they have to go peripheral to get any vision accomplished. Yeah, so that's why we use these trial frames, because no, you know, you can maneuver around, be in your position, and I can check vision in your position. If you're behind this machine that we typically use, standard doctors, that's just not going to get the right answer. And then some patients require some contact lenses. Can any of you think of any reason why I would use a contact lens for people who are having vision problems? Can anybody think of any reasons for contact lenses? Most people think of contact lenses just like an alternative to glasses. But I actually custom design special lenses for certain people. I have at the end a little case thing that I'll share with you. But I have, for example, an albino patient who has a semi-transparent eye. So their iris is not blocking all the extra light. And so they're constantly squinting because there's too much light in their vision. So I can design a contact lens that's painted. Now, their vision may or may not improve, but at least their symptom of squinting is better. A lot of those patients have astigmatism. So that's one reason where contact lenses are, you know, not your typical correction. We do strong readers, colored filters. Does everybody use color filters? Your yellows, your FL41s. Oh man, I think these are awesome. You put them on, if they work, they work. If they don't, then throw them away, that's fine. Next, and we live in Florida, so don't forget sunglasses, especially my RP patients or anybody who's very sensitive to light, sunglasses are critical. All right, so once we get past the kind of the glasses and the basic refraction stuff, now we get into the tools, right? And this is where the different aids will help. So first thing I like to talk about is far away. Do you know why I do far first? Because most people really want reading. And if I start reading, I'll never get to the far. So I take a couple minutes to teach you about faraway vision, whether you want to use a spotting telescope. Does anybody have a spotting telescope? Good. The idea is that, okay. Yeah, you can use TV glasses. I have some that you can focus. There's little clips that you can put onto glasses to give you a little bit of magnified distance vision. There's augmented and virtual reality devices that you can wear and zoom in and out with a little remote control. So there's a lot of cool things out there. As far as electronics are concerned, this is very important nowadays because life is almost completely electric, and you can magnify, you can see the screen bigger, you can maybe put it on your TV very simply with a button, you can play games, you can have all kinds of fun features on this device. And what you want to do is you want to go to the Apple store and tell them to train you. That training is free. You just have to sign up for it. So if you have an iPhone or an iPad or an iComputer, you go online to the local store in your area, you sign up for some free time, and they will train you on how to use that device with low vision, okay? So if you need that help, go ask for it. There's software like your Fusion, your iZoom, your Seeing AI, audiobooks, And then we get into the near vision, of course, magnification, video mag, lighting, closed circuit televisions, blah, blah, blah. We definitely know those. Does anybody use OCR, text to speech? Yeah. So text to speech is another cool thing. How about AI, artificial intelligence, like your OrCam or your Envision glasses? Good. So these are things that do things on your behalf. You're not seeing squat. The device is reading for you. That's what AI means, artificial intelligence. But then don't forget about all these other things. And I'm not going to read this slide. I'm sorry, in the back. All right. I'm just going to review. Basically, you can go to these, you know, what is it? LSSS and what are those magazines? Maxi-Aids. And you can have a fun time shopping through that catalog. It's like Sears when I was a kid. Okay. Next slide, please. Here we go. So who are really suffering with a lot of these things? I always like to start with my young people first. So the inherited retinal diseases tends to affect younger patients. And so I start with those. Those are going to be your retinitis pigmentosa, Stargardt, cone dystrophy, Leber congenital, LCA, all these kind of conditions. And so for those are the ones that I'm going to really recommend that genetic testing, because we want to find out why and how, and more importantly, we can add you into studies. So if something comes out, you know, we can notify you that there's a new study that might affect you. And third, and really important as well, is to educate your family. If you plan on having, you know, children and a family, maybe you do want to know if you have the possibility of passing some of these things down to your children. Maybe you don't care, but maybe you do. So that's what genetic testing is for, right? But however, if they're starting to get into high school and it's time to pick a career and they need to kind of think about what they're going to do, maybe at that stage, so 14, 15, that's kind of when I think it's reasonable to do some testing, even if there's no disease process at that time. Any questions on the genetic testing? There's about 2 to 250 different genes that we're testing. There's regular genes, there's mitochondrial genes, there's all kinds of new research that's happening there. And we'll talk at the end, there's Luxturna. Everybody heard about Luxturna? Yeah, so there's some really cool things out there. If we happen to find that 1 in 200,000 person, boom, I have a treatment for you. Yes, sir.
Justin.
Okay. No, the patient said, is it the 23andMe? No, these are a specific genetic panel that I offer in my office. The one that I use is sponsored by the Foundation Fighting Blindness. They also have the My Retina Tracker system where, again, you can on your own decide to sign up. And if any new studies come out, you get fully notified so that you can be involved in what's happening. Yeah. Well, and again, we can just, it's a cotton swab. You just run it in your gums and you mail it in, and 3-4 weeks later, I have an answer for you generally. This is an example of pictures for retinitis pigmentosa. That's a really tough condition, right? It affects, you know, your peripheral vision, and a lot of patients really have, you know, trouble with that. Leaves you into that tunnel vision. And so if you've heard the words bone spicules, when we look at the retina, this is the retinal picture on the top left. All those little kind of black hash marks all the way around on the edge of the picture, that's going to be your bone spicules. That's the retinitis pigmentosa affecting the peripheral vision. And then the little area in the middle that's kind of pinkish is going to be, you know, the last remaining fibers of vision that we have. Next slide, please. And then there's macular degeneration. Different process altogether, right? This affects my seniors. And so what I think is happening is just what happens to all the sensors of the body. If you ask any 100-year-old, and I work with a lot of them, what you know, how their senses are doing, their sense of touch, their sense of smell, their sense of taste, their hearing, forget about hearing, and their vision. These are all the different senses, but unfortunately, they all decrease with normal aging. So I really just feel that macular degeneration is an unfortunate expression of normal life aging process. Now, like I said, some of it can be, you know, mitigated. We can definitely not smoke. If you're a smoker out there, you're doing the worst thing that you can do. The other thing is drinking lots of water and a good diet, and we'll talk about that at the end too. So next slide. With macular, you want to do the antioxidant vitamins. Everybody's heard of the AREDS too. That's going to have your vitamin C, E, copper, zinc, lutein, and zeaxanthin. So that's the mixture that was studied, and it doesn't prevent disease. It only halts the progression. So if you're going to tell your children, oh, take this because I don't want you to get what I have, it just doesn't work that way, unfortunately. So next slide, please. And then you have the I mentioned them briefly, the macular carotenoids. That's your lutein and your zeaxanthin. These are very powerful. The new studies show that these are blue light protectors. So if you're using a lot of electronics, I tell my patients, hey, you should consider doing some lutein and zeaxanthin. Sometimes we can take some of these things to augment, but they've also been shown to help prevent progression. Next slide, please. One of the treatments initially that was done for diabetes is what's called laser photocoagulation. And this is where you take a laser and you're going to pretty much burn or cauterize those leaky vessels, because if those vessels continue to leak, it separates the retina and now your vision is really bad. So controlling these leaky blood vessels is what that laser is all about. Now, this is not first line anymore. This is what they used to do 10 plus years ago as first line. Now we have new injectables that help with this. Next slide. So with macular, before it becomes wet, you've got the geographic atrophy. Does anybody here have geographic atrophy from macular degeneration? No? So two new medications that have recently been launched. I have one that's launched and one that's about to launch, and they said 6 months to a year. So Sifovra from Apellis, and then they actually don't have the name for the other one, but it's from Iveric Bio. And the idea is that these are monthly or bi-monthly intravitreal. So we inject your eye. Does anybody here get eye injections? Yeah, that's fun, isn't it? Does it hurt? So the pain injection is worse than the injection itself. I'm so sorry. But generally, there's not severe pain because the white part of the eye doesn't have nerves. So it sounds horrendous, but it's not as bad as it sounds. But the idea with these medications is the complement activation. Complement is thought to contribute to retinal cell death. And so these medications are going at different directions, trying to find how we can fight this disease. All right. It does not reverse damage that's already happened. So that's one of the drawbacks. And if you have some central involvement, it could potentially make your vision a little worse. But the idea is that we're making it a fraction worse in hopes that it won't get severely worse. That's a really a tough sell to sometimes. Hey, I'm going to make your vision worse so that it doesn't get severe. I know that's hard. And then you have the anti-VEGFs. VEGF is vascular endothelial growth factor. We use the stupid medical terms that nobody understands, not even me. But VEGF, when it's released, will stimulate the creation of new blood vessels. So these medications are your Avastin, your Lucentis, your Eylea, your Beovu, which was discontinued, but that was one. And now there's two new ones, Biuviz and Cimerli, which are biosimilars. And what biosimilar means is that they took a different drug, but it acts in a similar way, and they've been able to approve it through the FDA. So that's all that biosimilar means. All right. This one really impressed me. And when I went to speak with the retinal guys that I work with, they said that this is the worst idea on the planet. It's called Susvimo, all right, from Genentech. But basically, they designed this little implant, and the idea was that it's like a port. And so you would put this implant on the white part of the eye, and that way every time they inject you, they're not injecting your eye, they're putting it into this little implant. Yeah, like a port for treatments of others, yeah. But what happened is it wouldn't hold in place, it was falling in, it was falling out, and people were getting severe infections. So they pretty much terminated the implants, and now they're just using the injection the same way that the other ones are used, just inject it straight into the eye with one advantage. This guy gives you 3-4 months instead of every month. So it's a pretty good medication. Next one, please. This is incredibly, I think this is incredible, but I haven't been able to find anybody that wants to work with me on these. These are literally small implantable telescopes. So when the patient goes to have cataract surgery, they would have one eye done with normal cataract for faraway vision, but then the other eye, I actually implant a little micro telescope. It's right here on the tip of this person's finger. So it's pretty small, okay? And they put it right behind the iris. And now it's kind of like when you do bioptic driving with, you know, you can have the straightaway vision for your far. And when you want to use a telescope, you just dip your head to look through the telescope. So in this case, we train the person. Like if you're a shooter by any chance, we try to shoot with two eyes open, but the person would use their distance vision with the one eye. And then when they needed that really far away telescopic vision, they just concentrate and use the other eye. So it's pretty neat. No surgeon does, right? Risk means malpractice means things. So even if you have the best intentions and you're trying to do the right thing, but you harm someone, that's just not going to feel good. And so that's why I've had a lot of trouble getting any of my cataract doctors to go into this. But I suspect this will come and progress further as we get, you know, more intelligent on these things. But a little telescope, and they just kind of push it in with a needle. It's pretty cool. I think it's amazing. So now I call this and beyond. And beyond, there's, you know, stem cell therapy, you know, so we can actually use iPS cells. That's the induced pluripotent stem cells. These are cells that can become anything. So if we need retina cells, they become retina cells. If we need retinal pigmented epithelium, then we make it RPE. So they're very, very impressive, okay? And then so the newly grown layer has been shown to halt and reverse the progression of disease. But this is only in phase one. So we're not going to see this for a while, but it's one of the new things. Then we have the gene therapy. And again, the point of gene therapy and these injections is that we can find a few different mechanisms so that we can hit it from different directions, right? When you tackle it from one direction, it's good. But when you tackle it from three or four different directions, you generally have a better result. So that's the whole point of these gene therapy. Your Leber's patients, it's about 1 in 200,000, so it's incredibly rare. But, you know, we can give 200 to 300% improvement. That, to me, is amazing. That's fixing the problem. That's not just, here, take a little, you know, aspirin. That is some functional improvement. And so the idea is that we want to do it as early as possible. I have a doctor who says that if that gene pops up, I'm treating immediately. The safety profile is so good after 3 years of data that they don't hesitate. I'm going to treat that, you know, that young person and hopefully prevent it to have that life of low vision, which is so difficult, as all of you very well know. The Argus 2, it's a three-part device, blah, blah, blah. We'll move from that one. I'll skip it. So this is an example of diabetic retinopathy. If you look at the retina here, again, you don't necessarily have to be a doctor to know that there's some weirdness going on there. In the very middle, you have a ton of blood, right? And all those red things are all bloods. And so that's all leaking. So imagine what the vision is there. The vision is pretty awful. All right. And so next slide, please. Diabetic retinopathy, we all know about that. The intravitreal injections, the photocoagulation, and vitrectomy. They can take out all the insides of the eye if it's necessary to. So what I wanted to do for the very end is maybe run one or two of these cases. I've put three cases up there, and I'll let you guys pick which one we do first. I have the surfer who is a massage therapist. I have keeping Uncle Mickey pest-free. And I have working at Publix in the back. Number three, anybody else? So I want to kind of involve you guys into how I do this, right? So the patient comes in. What's the first thing we do? We're going to ask them a bunch of questions. In fact, I have a questionnaire that they have to do before they show up, because I want to know all the things and not waste my visit with those questions, right? That's why I give you to all this, you know, I know it's challenging. I know filling out these things is hard, but it's either we waste my exam time doing those questions or you take the time and fill them out. But so he comes in, he says, "Doc, I'm 62 years old. You have to get me to work till I retire. If I lose my job, I can't do what I have to do. So you have to make sure that I can work another whatever 4 or 5 years until I hit retirement." I said, "Okay. So what do you do, sir?" "Well, I do pest work at Disney." That's why Uncle Mickey, right? And so what are some of the things that you guys can think of that might be important for this person? What are the things that are going on in my head as I heard this person works with pests? That's right. He's got dangerous chemicals. This person needs to be able to read those labels very carefully. Yes, excellent. Anything else? Well, moving around, right? He has to put the chemicals here, but now he has to go across the place to go into some other place. So maneuvering around. And guess what? He doesn't have a license. So how's he going to move around from place to place? Does he have to have an assistant? So believe it or not, with this patient, I was able to write a special note, and he can drive his gator little thing in the roads that belong to Disney. He can't have a license and he can't drive in Florida, but Disney's a private property. So he can drive inside Disney roads. He's working. That's what I wanted. I could care less how he looks. He's able to work. This man walks into my office and hugs me every time. He's just pleased to death that he's got what he needs to be able to hit his retirement and do his life. Any questions on patient one? See how cool this is? This is the best job on the planet. I listen to people complain and I try to do propose a solution, right? So let's do the working at Publix person. All right, patient comes in, sit down in my chair. Well, he's 49 years old, young man, and he works in the back. So what are some of the things that this person is going to complain about? Anybody have any ideas? What does this person need to do for his job? Yeah, lifting, moving. There's lots of moving parts. It's kind of dark back there. And he goes outside and it's super light, and he goes inside and it's super dark. So, and he's albino. So his albinism, again, I talked to you earlier about how the lights really affect these poor patients. So what were some of the things we're going to recommend for him? Well, for him, I did those contact lenses, believe it or not. I put those contact lenses on him. I did my best to correct his vision. His vision did not improve one lick. But he stopped squinting. He went from looking like this to looking normal. And that to me is a home run. And he's not complaining about all the glare and lights. Number two, he's in the back in the warehouse and there's boxes up there that he needs to read. How does he do that? Those are good options. Believe it or not, we got him an OrCam. Did you know your OrCam will do faraway stuff? Yeah. So I guess I have a little bit of time. I'll finish the third one and then I'll open it up for questions. But the last one is, he's kind of my favorite. He's one of my first patients that I had maybe 6 or 7 years ago. And I just think he's amazing. He's a 17-year-old kid when I met him. He's graduated. He went to massage school and became a massage therapist. He is the best looking blonde little surfer from California you can imagine. He looks like the Beach Boys. This kid is just, he's beautiful. You know, I love my wife to death, but he is a good looking guy. Yeah. And so he comes in and he says, my family history, you know, because he's got Lebers. So there's a bunch of it in the family. And so what are his complaints? He's a student. What are we going to do for a student? Reading. Writing. He's got to look at somebody up here that's doing teaching and presentation. So he's got to see a little bit of variable distance. He's got to move from classroom to classroom and do that effectively. And now he's a massage therapist. So he's going to do intake forms that people, you know, sign up for his services and such, or maybe he has to take payment. And this young man reads like 2 inches from his face. It's really challenging. But I want to tell you, his attitude is about the best I've ever seen. He's like, well, these are my problems. What can you do for me? Well, here are some of the potential ideas. Well, I don't like this. I don't like, let's try this one. Okay. And so we start playing and getting into it. So what did we figure out? I actually wrote his intake forms. I went to my house. I created some forms for him. And now he uses those, which are low vision. He gives them to his patients. And that's how he does the intake stuff, because I couldn't find another way to do it. The place that he works is not on a computer, because I said, well, why doesn't your place send the forms ahead of time to the customer so that you don't even have to deal with it? But that wasn't an option. So we found that solution. I was able to secure one of these Clover books. Is anybody familiar with Clover book? It's a portable CCTV that fits into a briefcase, but it has an additional screen in the back with a video camera. And so you put the video camera on the presenter, like me in front of you, and you would have that person on the top screen, but you still have your CCTV and you can do your notes and your reading and your writing simultaneously. So I think this thing changed the game. And so what I'm trying to say by giving you these three examples is I didn't use the same tool twice. And they're three different patients. So that's why there's not one case that's identical. I haven't had two patients that are the same. They might have the same exact condition. They might have similar complaints, but the actual fixing the situation, completely different. Listen, that's pretty much all I have for you. Oh, wait, I got one more slide. These are my secrets to life, all right? I always like to end on a happy note. So these are Dr. Richardson's secrets to life. Number one, and this again, these are my secrets, so don't criticize me. You need to have faith in God, okay? So number one is faith in God. Number two is relationships. Those are your friends and your family. These are the people that are going to support you every time through the good and the bad. You need to drink a lot more water. Then you need to have a balanced diet. Go ahead and think about the colors of the rainbow. You want to have fruits and vegetables that cover all the colors. Those colors are all different antioxidants. That's why you need to have them all, okay? So you need your green kale and spinach, and then you need your red, whatever, peppers and this and that, and your carrots. So you need to have all the colors of the spectrum for your diet. Then you need to rest and sleep. You can't regenerate. You can't remember things. You can't recall things if you don't have good rest. That's when all the magic happens. We need to recharge our personal batteries. Then you need to do stress management. And stress, believe it or not, is sometimes nothing we can identify. It could be an external stressor that you're not paying attention to. So it doesn't necessarily mean your work or your family or your spouse or whatever. It could be anything. It could even be diabetes itself is a stressor. So you have to manage your stress, whether it's a punching bag or exercise, whatever it takes. You want to exercise regularly. And notice I didn't say what kind of exercise, because I want you to do it. I don't care what you do. You just have to do something, okay? You want to walk? Great. You want to jog? Great. You want to swim? Great. Bicycle? Great. Whatever it takes, do some exercise. And lastly, you need to find joy and happiness. You need to do whatever you want to do. We're Americans. That's what America's all about. That's why I went to war, so we can do whatever we want, okay? We're Americans. That's what we do. We do whatever we want. So you need to go out there, find joy, happiness, and do whatever it is that makes you happy. Any questions? Yes, please. Back here in the back. The mic is coming to you, sir.
Thank you for so far an excellent presentation. My question is... I've been legally blind for, 15 years, give or take, but I used to be able to see quite well, even with the legal blindness. That said and done, I've now reached the point of where I'm only able to have light perception. However, if I hold my hand up against the light, does that qualify me as a low vision person or as a blind person? Because I can't see hardly anything, so I consider myself blind, but I'm not really in the true sense of the word blind.
Right.
How would you describe me?
Well, again, I don't necessarily describe you at all. I'd say you have these challenges, and I would show you various tools. I would even show you magnifiers just in case. If you saw with any of these a nice large, you know, CCTV, do you see anything with any of that? Nothing.
No, not anymore.
So then we start talking about the artificial intelligence, the things that read to you. And then we start talking about smart canes and things that can help you with AIDS, or maybe a guide dog, or, you know, you're right. At that point, you're more on the blind side, but you still have some light perception, right? That's right. Why that word, I don't love the word blind. It doesn't mean anything to me, right? It just, you have poor vision, but there's all these layers, you know? So did that answer your question, sir?
It did.
Okay, you're welcome. Yes, ma'am, over here on the right. Coming at you. This is going to be the last one, Mikey.
All right.
Okay. This is going to be our last question, guys. Go ahead, please.
You talk about a lot of wonderful devices. Mm-hmm. Many of them, especially the high tech, are extremely expensive.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to make that a priority in my career to see if I can get Medicare to cover these devices. And I think I'll be successful, but so far I haven't. I'm not big enough just yet, but I'm working on it. Okay. The idea is that you can get a wheelchair from Medicare, but you can't get a low vision device. That doesn't make any sense. right? They're saying, well, that, you know, you don't need vision to live or be retired. I think that's, it's ridiculous. That's a government problem. Those are government problems. Those are not people problems. I promise you, we should have that coverage. However, having said that, we don't have that just yet. The way that I go around it is a few ways. Number one, there's division of blind services. However, DBS generally helps those two categories. If you're working or if you're a student, if you're not in those categories, the help is limited, okay? But there is some support. There's also Lighthouse of Central Florida that can sometimes help. There's also my favorite, which is the Friends and Family Network. You know, there's always birthdays, Christmases, and these kind of things. But I would challenge you and say one last thing. If I showed you a device that changed your life, what's $4,000? Really? So, I mean, that's kind of how I put it at the very end. If you try this thing and you said, I can't live without it, 4,000, I mean, everybody's car in here or family car is more than $4,000. So I would put it to you like that. I don't get to pick the prices, but I am hustling to figure out ways around it. I promise you. I am trying to figure that out because I don't think it's fair. All right. Thank you so much for your time, guys. Thank you for inviting me, Mikey. I appreciate the time.
Thank you, guys. It's not often that we have a breakout session where the room is absolutely ensconced and quiet. So you definitely had my audience here. If anybody needs Dr. Richardson's contact information, just email me and I will get you guys in contact with him. But we have a legislative imperative that we've been working on at the national level, which deals with CMS, which is a Center for Medicaid Offices, and trying to get so many things approved, because as technology has changed, the original law was written for Medicare that they would not cover anything with a lens, which automatically leads anything that we need off the table because everything that we need has a lens. So at some point, if you're really interested in starting to dip your toe in the water at a federal level, we'll be happy to bring you with the Florida team. Yeah, how's that for a good invitation, folks? Well, Dr. Richardson, thank you so much for your time. If somebody could get my lights on, because I do need some lighting here. And we're going to take a few extra minutes for the FCCOV members to have a few discussions here.